Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I'm a beast. I'm a beast. I'm a beast. I'm a really big beast. I'm a beast. I'm a beast. I'm a beast. I'm a beast with the big fat ears. I'm a beast. I'm a beast. I'm a beast. I'm a beast with the big fat ears.
Hello and welcome to Two in the Think Tank, the show where I come up with five sketch ideas.
Andy, in many ways, that's true.
Oh, God, Alistair. I mean, I'm sorry.
I felt
that I needed to acknowledge it as well, just to be totally upfront with what I'm obviously thinking, and I'm, you know, I don't know why I'm coming at it from this angle.
Andy, I think it's a great angle to come at it from.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, one of like real selfish, sort of self-righteous.
I think it was the kind of angle that someone who comes up with a lot of ideas would come from. So I would never have thought to come at it from that direction. So
great.
That was clever.
Yeah, and checks out.
I'm going to write it down.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a sketch. Hey, you're listening to Two in the Think Tank. And
we're doing a show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival.
We always plug it at the very, very end of the podcast. But by then, I mean,
who knows how many people are still listening?
Who knows?
It goes from March 26th to April 21st. It's at 9:15 p.m. It's called Magma. You can buy tickets now. And if you do, that helps us immensely by not feeling scared about the upcoming festival.
Oh, we'll still feel scared.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, it'll be a good kind of anticipatory fear as opposed to a cloying dread, you know? And
yes. That's
a very important distinction. No, it'd be wonderful if you could come. It's going to be a very funny show, Alistair.
I know.
Yeah. That was directly directed at you. It would be wonderful if you could come.
Yeah, well, I know it's going to be good because it's filled with loads of ideas that I know that you've come up with.
Thank you. I come up with five sketch ideas.
Andy,
yes, Alistair?
Do you ever grab your nose hairs that are poking out of your nostril and pull at them?
Yeah.
Just with your fingers to pull them out?
Yeah, I yank them out. And then, like, occasionally I found myself doing it, like, work and stuff, and I'm like, this is not okay.
It's weird that you should say this because, I mean, I brought it up because that's something I do.
No way.
And I mean, it's crazily satisfying.
Yeah.
But also, like,
man, it hurts so much, though, right?
Yeah.
It hurts so much.
But it's such a thick hair.
Yeah.
That
short,
when you do get
thick,
out.
Solid little hair.
Mm.
You really feel like you're uprooting something, and that pain that you get when you're pulling it out is almost disappears instantly. There's no ongoing pain, and it's replaced with like a satisfaction at having pulled out this chunky hair, but also the need to sneeze. I find a lot of the time,
but also the knowledge that you are more immaculately groomed than you were just moments earlier.
A moment ago. Yeah. It's momentarily immaculate. Now, you say you do this. Have you ever done it at work?
Andy, I don't think there's any limits to where I could do it.
Because that's really reassuring to me, because this is one of those things where it's like, I have done it where I know I have, and I don't know if other people have seen, because I know, and I think that if they did see, I also don't know if they've processed it.
Mm.
And the fact that you say you have probably done it at work and I've never seen it or certainly processed it makes me feel that this might be one of those things that, like, people just filter out, and then I feel a lot better about having done it, you know?
Sure.
Like, there's certain behaviors that are probably not okay.
Well, I think this could be one that probably could be
not okay, but I think you your mind gets taken off of how gross it is by how violent it is.
Oh, okay. Do you think that's a thing that happens a lot?
Well, yeah, I think because...
Yeah, sure, he was gross, but I didn't really notice that because he was so violent.
Well, because you're not thinking about the hair when the really abrupt...
Yanking.
Sort of, yeah, arm movements are happening.
Right, so you'd just be like, that guy's flailing. He's just flapping around because... And this is what it is. Mm. Your eye is attracted by the yanking, by the motion.
Yeah.
But because you, it takes you that fraction of a second to cotton on and be like, that man is moving quickly over there. His arm is moving. Mm. You don't, you're not there. You're not tuned in to see the moment at which the hand is pulling away from the nose. Yeah. You only get a fraction afterwards when it's just a little twitch.
That's right. Well, right? Because I think what you're having to do is you're having to go from sort of zero movement.
Mm.
And then I think you got to get... You got to get the kind of the elbow to start the moment, the momentum down before you actually let the hand move.
Mm.
Sort of, so that's the weight that kind of keeps it, right. Gets it moving first.
Yeah.
And so then you're really like that, and you're going down.
It's a kind of a whiplash kind
of
motion.
You're attempting to get some kind of whiplash, even though you know.
Do you think it breaks the speed of sound?
It feels like it does.
Mm.
There's, you know, it's that there's a sort of a. There's the popping version, like there's a pop, but only through the sense of touch. You know, you feel it kind of out.
Like it's that. One of those things that doesn't make a noise, but if it did, that's what it would be.
Yeah, that's right. Now, is there a sketch in this in some way?
Nothing's coming to me right away.
Well,
what it has led me onto in my mind, and can I move on to just a slight...
You may attempt.
Is that, like, we have the sonic boom.
Okay.
Right, which is when things go faster than the speed of sound. But could we have booms in other areas when things go faster than the speed of smell or touch?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
No.
Like, and feel free to just say no.
No, no, I mean, like, I always love the idea of the speed of smell.
Yeah?
I think that makes me laugh straight away. But at the same time, I think it's really stupid.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so I think you would need to have a smell that went faster than the speed of smell, right? Mm. In order to create a smellic boom, right?
Smellic.
Smellic boom. Now, the smellic boom would then have to be some sort of smell-based phenomenon where there is a huge release of smell that has become pent up behind in front of the smell that is moving faster than the speed of smell.
Mm-hmm.
What could that be compared to? You know, what in our day-to-day experience could possibly be a smellic boom?
Hmm. The closest thing, I guess, that I experience is when you, let's say you've got 2 weeks off from work, and on the day you go back to work, in the morning you go get your backpack in which you're going to put your lunch in there, and you find... The leftovers of the lunch from 2 weeks ago, and you open that.
Yeah.
And it really does hit you.
A similar thing would be the fridge that or the freezer that has become disconnected from the power or has stopped working.
Yeah.
And when you open that door and that waft that comes out of the freezer compartment or whatever it is, it's a very, like, intense... Seems like fast-moving smell.
Yeah, but it's not the same, you know.
You're right. The parallel doesn't exist. It's just an intense smell, Alistair. And if this was a riff about coming up with intense smells, that'd be great. But it's not. It's a riff about comparing two things that are impossible to compare, which is the thing that we try and do on the podcast all the time. And sometimes it works out. And I'm going to say this time, it's a bust, you know.
But, you know, there are... Maybe with the pulling the hairs out of the nostrils.
Yes.
And look, there may be women who do that. Maybe they do pull them out, yank them out like that.
Maybe.
That could be the case.
Maybe.
But
it feels like that would be one of the things that society has, like, forced women not to do.
See, you know? So not only have they forced women to groom in certain ways, you know, they feel all these this pressure to
remain,
pull hairs off of different things. But then they feel pressure to not pull hairs out of their nose in public,
I think,
at work, while sitting at their computer.
I think it's interesting that all women pulling out of hair has become a thing that is hidden away from society. It's like death.
Mm.
You know, you never see it anymore. I think that, I think
yes, Andy.
Society should continue to force women to, society can continue to force women to have to like rip out all their hair if society wants. But now
we don't want
to
take away society's autonomy.
Exactly, society. I'm not going to tell society what to do when it comes to telling women what to do. But now,
or men.
But now, all those things have to happen in the street,
right?
On the footpath, on a little table. So if people are going to get hairs ripped out of them, right, it has to be done in sort of so everybody can see. So society has to can understand the consequences of what it's forcing people to do. Right?
Yeah,
it
right.
really is like, you know, not only do we want women to do this to get waxed or whatever it is, we don't want to see it happen. We want it to be done in a real nice, clean-looking, day spa type thing that where the name doesn't even really allude to exactly what it is that's going on in there, so that we don't have to even think about it. It's not that the hair isn't just being erased from the body; it's being erased from history.
Sure, right?
It's like it was never there.
Well, I think maybe
they should hang up all the strips of used wax on at least with all the hairs in it out the front.
Well, I think that maybe while we're doing this, Andy,
yes,
because I think what you're touching on is sort of part of a bigger problem.
Mm. I'm so glad there's more to this.
Yeah, it's much like people eating meat. You know, people talk about it's the murder of these animals that is happening behind closed doors, and people are disconnected from it.
Mm.
So I think that should probably also be happening on little benches.
Yes.
In public.
Little benches in the street.
But then, what's going to happen then if we just have it in little benches, right? People are just going to stay inside and not look outside. So I think maybe it should just be in all the places where people are looking. You know, where people, you can go in people's houses and that's where you kill chickens.
Yes.
You want to have a meat industry. You want to have people that are hair-free, right? And it all starts because of a guy getting given shit for yanking the nose hairs out of his nose while sitting at his desk.
Because he's really taking a stand. He's saying that if society wants me to not have nostril hairs, society has to know what's involved in that, right? And that is me yanking them out and feeling this pain and having a sneeze, you know?
Yeah.
You can't expect me to hide this from you anymore.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna mollycoddle you, society. Yeah. I'll do what you want, but you have to watch me while I do it.
Mm-hmm. My name is Wyatt Knight.
Yeah. Is that a thing? Is that name sort of already allocated as like an online?
I don't know. I've never seen it before.
Oh, that's good though. You should use that. You should become a right-wing sort of satirist of some kind.
Mm.
All right.
Sure. I mean,
yeah.
I think is that a more of a left thing though?
White Knight.
Yeah, like it's a more of a thing that left people kind of complain about.
Is it? I don't know. Aren't we all complaining about so many things?
Well, I mean, we're complaining about so many things. We should just find something in common.
I mean, that'd be great. I think that is a thing, Alistair. What we just talked about. Public hair removal.
Public hair removal. Yeah, murder of animals. What's the other things we're disconnected from, Andy? That we do that's bad. Public climate change. How should we?
The death of polar bears or whatever.
Yeah, and all the insects. Should we watch the insects die?
This death of the insects thing, Alistair. This is my new favorite thing to be depressed about. I didn't even know about the total collapse of insects. I knew about the bees, but then I thought maybe the bees were having a comeback. I thought maybe the bees were going to be okay. But now it turns out that just like all insects are dying, all insect populations, and there's like we're on track at the current rate to have killed all insects by the end of the century. Now, that's not going to happen, right? We're not going to have killed all insects by the end of the century because like it's not going to be a strict linear replication of the rate at which we're currently wiping them out, because some insects will be more resistant to the things that we're doing to wipe them out. And as we progressively wipe out more insects, the ones that remain will be the ones that are the more resistant. So it'll taper off, right? But still, it is such a huge impact to be having as this, oh my God, goddamn pesticides spraying them out of planes onto crops. I've now started, like, for the first time ever, I consciously bought organic food this week. I've never done that.
Well, if it makes you feel better, organic food doesn't necessarily mean no pesticide was used.
You know what, Al? That makes me feel so much better. That is a huge weight off my mind. Yeah. What does organic mean? Is it one of those things that doesn't mean anything?
Well, it's one of those things that has multiple definitions and also...
Oh, great. That's really good. That's what we need in the thing that could potentially save all of humanity. Ah, a bit of vagueness.
But I think you could still save humanity by still using chemicals. You just need to get rid of the ones.
This would be great, though, if we could do it with chemicals. Mm. Whatever we do, if we could do it with chemicals, that'd be good.
Yeah.
As long as chemicals are involved. We don't know the solution, but we know it will involve chemicals.
Well,
how much chemicals? Good question. We don't know what kind, we do know how much.
We're going to take it to the edge, then pull it back a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Or it's going to seem like almost too much chemicals. We're going to keep putting them out there until it seems like everything's going bad. Then we'll stop it, bring it back a little. It'll be fine.
Well, maybe every time you spray bug killer, you should have to also spray bug food.
Great. That's
no, but there's there's things like, for example, I think here's something that that you can use a chemical. You can synthesize moth pheromone, right? And you can put it out there or whatever, and then I think it makes the moths. I'm not sure if it's one of the moths' pheromones that makes them go away,
right?
No, I think you spray it and then it
lures them somewhere.
Or it's like or it's the male pheromone, and then they can't smell the females in there, so they don't come to the area and they don't breed, and it doesn't cause.
Right. So this is for getting rid of moths. That's huge an insect problem that of moths.
Well. What do you think the problem is with growing crops?
Is it moths?
Well, sometimes it's moths.
Oh, no, moths.
Yeah.
Oh, I love moths.
Do you?
I'd never thought about moths as being a pest.
No, they are. They got dusty wings.
Oh, of course, they eat clothes and stuff, don't they?
They eat your clothes. That's a pestful thing,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, very pestful. Mm. Well, what about this, right? You can have insect spray.
Yeah.
You can have bug spray. But in the insect spray is like some very fine black powder,
okay, right?
So that when you spray it, sure, it's killing insects and destroying all insect populations, but then that very fine black powder goes up into the atmosphere and blocks some of the sun's light so that we don't die from global warming. So it'll just be a little,
it'll balance out. So, okay.
It somehow blocks out the sun.
Well, this idea of putting the stuff that volcanic...
Ash
kind of thing, the sulfuric thing.
Sulfur dioxide or whatever.
Yeah,
it is,
whatever up into the air.
That we talk about every week on this podcast.
Because you can do it and it'll cost like $10 billion a year or under, which is hugely cheap.
No, that's nothing.
Yeah, to fix the world problem. The only problem with it is that
is there a problem?
Yeah, is that it depletes the ozone layer.
Oh, fuck, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that was the thing that was going to save us.
Well, yeah, that's.
I was wondering if it might deplete the ozone layer, actually, because I was like, I wonder if there are going to be any negative consequences to this gas we're going to pump into the atmosphere. Yeah. Did you look it up? Did you?
I just listened to a podcast between seeing you at work and seeing you here. I listened to a podcast that was about this.
We have spent so much time together today.
Mm.
Wow! So you listen to this, and just in time to destroy my one hope of saving the planet.
There's other
anyway,
options.
Fortunately, I didn't say sulfur dioxide. I said some black stuff, black powder.
But Andy, we could whilst they're trying to come up with a solution, we could come up with a solution to save ourselves, make our human form resistant to
everything, death.
We're going to have to die. This is also why I'm skeptical of people who eat healthy food. You're still going to live at max 100 years old.
Yeah, those are the people to be skeptical of, Alistair. Good on you. These people eating healthy food.
Looking after themselves.
That's
so
a bit
we
sus.
Have to isolate ourselves. Mm. We have to be able to live without there being an ecosystem.
Okay.
No.
Maybe I feel like lichens could be the solution here. we just need to form a symbiotic relationship with one other creature that is capable of producing its own food.
Well, I think we just need a microsystem. We don't want to rely on the bigger ecosystem. We want to have like a biodome.
Mm-hmm. Or even a terrarium.
I mean, is that so crazy?
Yeah, just a terrarium. And it doesn't even have to, this is the thing, the terrarium doesn't even have to go all the way to the ground, right? It can just start sort of just below the anus, right, around your thighs, and then terrarium up here, up over your head. You can still walk around, but you're shitting, right, inside the terrarium.
Of course.
Your shit is going into sort of the ground at the bottom of the terrarium. Mm. The foods are growing up around your body.
Yep.
You're eating those foods and you're shitting them back out again. And it's a totally self-contained little system. Your little legs are still poking out the bottom, so you can still go about your business. Maybe you've got a series of magnets and long poles that allow you to interact with the, you know, the toxic environment around you. But within your little terrarium, you're fine.
But do you want to have other people in your life? Or is that...
Nah, you can touch it with your magnets and your poles. Well, you can touch their magnets and poles with your magnets and poles.
Okay, that's good. But I guess if you can't interact with them, then you need to also be growing sort of your emotional, like you kind of need to have like a, you can't just have sustenance. You know, like a man can't live on bananas alone.
No, that's a shame.
You need some spiritual fulfillment. So that needs to kind of be growing in there.
DVDs?
Could we, DVDs is good. I was going to suggest creating a smaller race of humans that are just created for your entertainment.
They thrive in your terrarium.
Maybe they could think that you're God. Maybe you could be the God.
Look,
in there.
I think we're getting to the bottom of exactly what existence is. We are all living in God's terrarium to amuse him while he tries to survive in some sort of bigger hostile environment that we couldn't possibly imagine.
Mm.
I mean... Is that so crazy? Feels like space is a pretty hostile environment, and that's where God lives.
Well, God could have access to another dimension in which he's an underling.
Mm. You know what I mean? Yeah. Whoa, we could all be a form of escapism for a God who works a really dull job.
Yeah, or, you know, he is not as merciful as he could be because he was mistreated by those around him.
And when you think about it, again, we talked about God's brother Todd. A long, long time ago on this show. But I think...
God Todd.
I think that God itself doesn't really sound like a winner's name. Like, if you take God away from all your knowledge about God and you just heard the name God...
Yeah.
He sounds like a dork.
Sure,
sounds like somebody who doesn't have a good job.
What do you think? Chod?
Chod.
Yeah,
what, like you think it's a better name?
It's closer to Chad. That feels more like a winner's name.
Like a winner's name, like Chad.
Like Chad.
You're right. Or Chad's winning. Chod. So there's Chod. He's the jock. There's Todd.
Yeah.
He's a real slacker, no-hoper.
Mm.
And then there's God in the middle, right? And he's not doing so great.
So wait, this terrarium idea.
Yeah.
The wearable terrarium,
mm-hmm.
so that you know, your portable ecosystem, mm-hmm. so that you can live with outside of thing. How big do you think it has to be?
I reckon it's like a sphere.
Sort of a whole sphere.
Well, maybe not a sphere. I'm picturing it shaped like a big piece of corn. You know, like a corn kernel.
So like you're in a corn costume.
It's like you're in a big corn costume, big transparent corn costume. Maybe you don't want it to be transparent. Maybe you don't want to see what's going on outside, right?
Yeah, but
maybe you're just blundering around the wasteland.
Yeah.
All you can see inside your terrarium are your tiny little people and your banana tree and your layer of shit around the ground.
Well, they're mixing that in with the hay and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Are they doing that? They could maintain it. This little species.
Well, are your arms on the inside or on the outside?
Your arms are on the inside, and then you've got some little sticks that poke out through holes and some magnets.
I think it wouldn't be good to have holes.
Really holes. They're like sealed. They've got rubber in them.
Yeah, that's what you want.
They got those like dinky rubber that looks like an old-fashioned gear stick.
Yeah, if you had one of those little like trays, like in a, you know, like one of those places where they accept cash, but they have like that tink thing that opens up and then you put something in, then it has to close and then you open it on your side.
Get some sort of very suspicious train station or something.
Or like just like when you're going into jail.
Mm. It's like a little airlock.
Yeah, a little airlock.
But for the thing that it blocks from escaping is trust.
But you would need a bit of air so that, you know, like when you're in the sun in a room that has no ventilation?
Mm.
Wouldn't that be bad?
That does sound pretty bad. Yeah. It sounds like a classic dogs die in hot cars type scenario, yeah. Doesn't it? Well, yeah. We'll so need...
Is it just that it's got an open bottom? But still, I think that hot air rising thing is going to be bad.
Yeah, no, I think it's got to be sealed off, but then it's got to have some kind of air conditioning system that pumps, you know, that just... Mm.
Semi-permeable membrane?
Oh, it could be a semi-permeable membrane, Alistair. Yeah. Could it use reverse osmosis?
Well, I don't know, Andy.
No, I don't know either. We don't even really know what any of those things are that we just said. But
how is this, I mean, obviously I like aspects of this. But how are we making it a sketch?
I think we're selling it.
Are we just starting this guy? Are we just starting on him and he's living his life? She's living her life?
It does sound like a short film, doesn't it? Sounds quite romantic as a short film.
You think so? Yeah.
Look, I think maybe what if this is
they're trying to get biodiversity. Well, they're going around looking for biodiversity.
But this is sort of basically this is an extreme version of what the right wing people have now twisted their messaging around to be, right? Mm. Not that we should, because before they were saying, well, there is no climate change, and now it's kind of pretty undeniable. Yeah. And now they're sort of saying, well, look, it's not worth the economic damage to change our economy. Instead, we'll just totally rebuild society in some way that allows us to adapt to this thing that we have no way of predicting, except for the fact that we know that it's going to be disastrous, right? And this is the sort of the end game scenario of that, where, and they would love this because it's all about the individual, yeah, right? There's no social responsibility for any of these things. Mm. It's up to the individual to build their own terrarium that they can walk around and survive in, right?
Sure.
Nobody ever said you had a right to clean air. Nobody ever said that you had a right to a livable planet, okay? Mm. Sensible thinking individuals who take care of their money and know how to look after their families will build themselves corn kernel-shaped inverted terrariums.
Great. Yeah, I kind of picture it like more like a glass dildo kind of scenario. You know those... Those guys that used to dress up in The Simpsons as the Duff Beers.
Mm. And just had their face sticking out?
Mostly like their face was kind of sticking out, but maybe that could just be a sort of like a bulbous window.
Yeah,
like,
bulbous, you know, window.
Bulbous window, and then inside there...
When you go to a reptile park, you look through the bulbous window.
Yeah.
It's like you're in there amongst all the snakes.
Mm.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just write down the words bulbous window.
You're right, I wrote bulbous window.
Yeah. You know, they say the eye is the window to the soul.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty bulbous window, the eye.
That's true, yeah. Bulbous window was actually my favorite 1960s political satirist.
Is that a reference to anything in particular?
I don't know. For some reason, I feel like it sounds like Aldous Huxley.
Oh, wow. Yeah, okay. Bulbous window, Fahrenheit 451. Is that bulbous window?
No, that's
fuck. Brave New World.
Brave New World. He also did Island, I think.
Mm, sure.
He also did
Island. Was that the one with Ewan McGregor?
I think it's a different movie.
Damn it. Because
I think this Island is.
Is this the one with Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Yeah, it's the one with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yes.
Yeah. He also did Doors of Perception.
Yeah. With Jean-Claude Van Damme?
That's right. Jean-Claude Van Damme takes mescaline with a babysitter and sees through the doors of perception. And once he has, he'll never be able to go back the same man that he was when he first went through the door.
Also, he round kicks someone to the head.
Himself.
Jean-Claude Van Damme, Dirty Ape.
MC Escher Van Damme, right? Is there... wait, what's... Van Damme does have that Claude. What's it? He's VD. Jean-Claude GC. Okay, VD.
What are we doing here?
Okay, wait. J.C. Escher Dam, right? And he's a guy who round kicks people, but he's always kicking up.
I mean, the ability to I guess that's really what happened in that movie Inception, isn't it? Like, the someone who had a sort of a superpower of being able to MC Escher things so that it looks like you're sort of punching in one direction, but actually you're punching in a direction that tricks the eye and it does some impossible twist around and then and it hits them in some other direction. That'd be pretty cool.
That would be cool.
You know?
Or if you were like an Elastigirl type person and you could actually punch backwards but then go all the way around the earth and punch the person in front of you in the back of the head.
It'd be real hard to aim though, wouldn't it? Because you wouldn't actually be able to see.
Yeah, but
you were punching.
Yeah, you get a feel for it.
I don't know that you would. I don't know that you would.
Yeah, right.
You know, you'd need a little GoPro end of your wrist, right? And then a little monitor on your face, and you'd be weaving around.
Evelyn from The Incredibles 2 did make a little camera for the suit, but she put it on the chest rather than on the fist. But I'm sure she could put one on the fist, or you could just move the chest one.
You mean Edna?
No, Evelyn.
Evelyn. Evelyn made the suit?
Yeah.
Well, she put
the camera into the suit because she was the inventor. I think they did get somebody else to design the suit, and Edna was not happy about it.
Gotcha. Okay, I'm so sorry. No, and I shouldn't have challenged you in your knowledge of The Incredibles too.
It's just that not only have I seen the movie many times, but we also have a CD that summarizes the movie in about 19 minutes, and I've heard that almost every day.
So, wait, it's a CD. Like, is it like somebody just telling you the story?
Yeah, it goes with a book.
Yeah, and are they like, do they have the characters' voices in there and stuff as well?
Some of them, yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool, though.
An all-electric Elasticycle.
This actually sounds like the way I would love to consume all media.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like it's an audio version of reading the Wikipedia page, which is, in a way, these are my two favorite things. Podcasts, so listening, and reading the Wikipedia page of really high-quality art that I would otherwise, you know,
Andy, I would almost emotionally invested that in. Podcast for you I just go into Wikipedia and read the synopsis of things.
It's such a good thing. It must be possible to do that. I wonder if there's any rights issues with that. There can't be, right? Wikipedia, it's all free. You're allowed to do whatever you want. You can just go in there and read it all out.
Pretty sure.
You know? I'll read out Wikipedia to you.
I'm reading it to you. I just said I was.
Great.
Would you listen to that?
I was in character as you when I said that.
That was really good. I actually saw myself in that.
Yeah. Well, I would.
Like,
I
literally would. After you said it, I said, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, you were already being me.
I would listen to that, Alistair. Yeah. I would have a real good time.
Okay, how about this?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mm-hmm. Useful nipples.
Now, this is a thing that I've thought about, right? Because we talk about the superfluous third nipple, right? But really the first two nipples are pretty superfluous. If you're a man.
Yeah.
Right? So why are we making fun of this third nipple? Also, how do you know if there's a superfluous third nipple, how do you know which ones are superfluous? Right? Which one's the superfluous one?
Yeah.
Really, the first two nipples are superfluous because it's the third nipple that allows you to say, I have a third nipple. You can't say, I have a second nipple, because that's not interesting. It's the third nipple that gives you a talking point, negating its superfluousness. It is useful as a thing to talk about the fact that you have a third nipple. The shame is you need the first two nipples in order to have a third nipple.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't have the first two nipples, you just have a first nipple. Yeah. You can't say to anyone, it's hard enough to say, I've got a second nipple. But to say I've got a first nipple to people, I mean, then you look crazy.
But it is also interesting, though, saying I have a first nipple.
I have a first nipple. Sure. I mean, it's an opener.
I would love, and I know it's not really wrong, but I would love to just, in conversation with people, just show them my nipple and just talk about it with them.
I mean, you could do it on a booth in the street, I suppose.
No, not in a booth. I just want, like, colleagues and, you know, family members and, you know, some, like, people that you meet whilst you're doing sort of, you know, you're at a party or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We should just be able to go, how weird is this weird bit of slightly discolored skin? Mm. It's like it feels pretty much like it, but it's a little bit softer like the rest of the skin. But
coming from film and TV, you know, which is where we work, really, the nipples to me look like they are markers that were put on there for some sort of green screen thing, like you were going to edit something else in and post.
Mm.
Like you just needed the two nipples as reference points, stick some nipples on there, and then when we get this into the edit suite, we can CGI on a doorknob or something into the middle of his chest, and we'll be able to, you know, map it in 3D. It'll look like the doorknob's really there. That's what I think they were for.
Yeah.
I mean, some biologists might disagree.
Could we put something more useful there?
More useful than the nipples.
Than the nipple.
Well, it feels like people who get their nipples pierced are well on their way to doing something useful with their nipples, but then they don't really do it.
They don't really do it. It feels like they could hang something there, some war medals or something like that.
Oh, wow. I mean, what an Anzac march that would be.
Mm.
You see our diggers out there, those proud boys, with their medals hanging from their pierced nipples.
Mm. I mean, could you do that with your grandfather's medals?
What a tribute. I don't know where my grandfather's medals are.
Does your grandfather have medals?
Yeah.
All right. I don't think we're medal winners.
In your family?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know if anybody has medals.
Is
it bragging to walk around with other people's medals?
It's... My first instinct is, yes, it's the worst thing you can do. My second instinct is... Oh, but it's actually quite a nice tribute to somebody who was important to you and your family. And I feel like I should have had those instincts in the other order.
Yeah, sure.
To make me a better person. Mm. Maybe not even had that first instinct at all. Mm. Just gone with the nice one thing to pay tribute to someone in your family. But I bet there are also people who do it for real toxic and horrible reasons about, like, trying to appropriate valor and, you know, glorify war that they didn't understand and weren't a part of. So,
but is there a way that they could, that you could do a really bad thing like that for good?
Well, exactly. I think there is, and I think if you want to wear your grandfather's medals, you should have to do it with them hanging off your nipples, right? And now you feel not all of, but at least some of the sacrifice and the pain that your forebear had to go through. It's a little more meaningful. And the more medals they won, the more weight pulling down painfully on your nipples. So you experience even more, like, you know, probably even in a proportionate amount to the amount of suffering that they had to go through to get all those medals is the amount of suffering that you have to experience wearing them dangling from your nipples as you march in the Anzac Day march, the Anzac Day parade.
Sure.
And that is the only fitting way that ongoing generations we can pay tribute to the diggers, and people take war, you know, a little more seriously, I think.
I think there's nothing that will take, you know, make people take it more seriously than the wearing it off our nipples. And I mean, I guess the whole point of it is that we're remembering these people who have made these
sacrifices. And we're still definitely remembering them.
And I think that memory will be much more seared deeply into your memory if you see sort of them dangling off
nipples. Bleeding nipples.
Bleeding nipples. So it's not even a good piece.
No, it's not. It's not good at all. No, it's been done under war conditions. The flip side is, of course, is that conscientious objectors were given feathers as a symbol, as a sort of an insult.
Now, right, and then they're going to put them through their nipples and... Because it's organic and it's from dirty birds, you'll get infected and their descendants will die, which is what people wanted really from the beginning.
I was going to say that having a feather hanging from your nipple wouldn't weigh nearly as much and you wouldn't feel that, and it would probably be a good message about how not going to war is also pretty good probably.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think nipple medals is a sketch idea, Alistair. If anything's a sketch idea, nipple medals is a sketch idea, right? There's a few different ways you can run at this as well.
Yeah.
Like, you can absolutely do a modern artist who's doing, like, it feels like a thing that a modern artist would do.
Yeah.
Right? They would get their grandfather's medals and they would hang them off their nipples and they would just stand in a gallery space. They wouldn't even bother doing a painting or a photograph or they just go and stand there with these things hanging off their nipples and everyone walks around them and looks at them and they don't react whatever you do to them or something. Or maybe they do.
Maybe they do. Maybe they attack you.
Maybe they attack you. That's a great one. That's a great twist on it, isn't it? Because there's been a few other ones where you go and sit. I think Shia LaBeouf did one where you could go and sit opposite Shia LaBeouf and you could do whatever you wanted to him and he wouldn't react. What about
one where they attack you if you do something to them?
Yeah, and you don't even have to go and sit opposite him. He's just in the street, and he'll just attack you.
Oh, it's like a public rampage, but for art.
Yeah, art rampage.
Yeah, the sort of the active shooter kind of, but as art.
I'm trying to think of a pun now about going on a rampage.
Going on a pampage.
Pampage.
Yeah.
Oh. Pam, she sounds like the person in the office who cleans out the fridge at the end of the week and throws out everybody's food if they haven't labelled their containers, and she calls it going on a Pam page, or people call it going on a Pam page behind her back.
This might feel like nothing, but what about all the food at the back of a fridge, maybe a workplace? That during the weekend kind of sneaks out and becomes a bigger and bigger being, going from fridge to fridge, accumulating new parts that are it's become so alive. And then it's a horror kind of movie where people are being brought down by sort of curries and sort of roasted vegetables and different things that they've not emptied from their.
How are they being brought down? Is it killing them? Is it like coming creature?
Yeah. It's like looking at them from, you know.
That's an amazing soundscape, Alistair. I love it.
That's like, you know, it's hiding in sort of stationary cupboards and things like that. It's looking around and it's trying to take people down and puts its disgusting, like, you know, roasted carrot stick fingers over their face as they kind of walk past the stationary cupboard, pulls them in.
Is it called Freezer Burn? Is that the name of this movie?
Well, I think it's in the fridge because the freezer will actually pervert.
Is it called things. CRISPR?
Could it be called CRISPR?
Yeah, CRISPR called seems CRISPR. Like the name of a horror movie, right? I mean, I realize it's probably not the CRISPR area that you're thinking of, is it? You're thinking more of those upper shelves, you know, and that space really at the back.
But maybe the core of it starts in the CRISPR.
Great. Our CRISPR, we have real issues with our CRISPR at home just because, like, it's deep and you put the food on top of the pile and then the stuff at the bottom really does go, you know. I like it.
I think Pam would really come into her own in this.
In this she's kind of our, thing. Like, last hope and savior.
I told you to clean out the fridge.
Maybe she went on maternity leave.
That's what happened.
Maybe she had a hip operation.
Yeah,
I'm now basing this really closely on a woman that I knew when I was teaching. She was amazing. I wrote a short story about her.
Really?
Yeah, where she became a creature of pure organization and ascended to like a higher plane because she was just so organized. She did everything at the school. She was like, yeah, incredible. And then people would get sick and she would just take on their workload as well. You're like, surely you can't be doing this also. And she was also always so calm.
Really?
Yeah.
Had she reached enlightenment?
I think it's very possible that she had. Yeah, she'd achieved some kind of laminar flow. Laminar flow. God, I love me some laminar flow. But laminar flow of just like efficiency, just like workplace efficiency, which is also incredible in a teaching environment where there's just so many unpredictable things and so much chaos. What a woman. She was amazing.
What is she doing now?
I don't know. I'd like to think she's still there.
Is she, did she have kids?
She had a son. Yeah. He worked in the IT department.
Really?
Mm.
So efficient.
Mm.
And he was 7 years old.
Yeah. He was across it. Hey, do we have words from a listener?
Yeah, we do. We yes. do. You might know this listener, Andy.
I hope I do.
They're a Patreon supporter.
Oh, yeah.
Their last name is a form of communication.
Text message?
Yep. It's Graham text message. It's Tabitha Post.
Tabitha Post! Hi, Tabitha.
Hi, Tabitha Post.
Thanks for listening to the podcast, Tabitha. And thank you for giving us words on the Patreon. Thank you for supporting us on Patreon.
Thank you, everyone who supports us on Patreon. You're all delightful. We appreciate it. It's such a helpful way for to help us get Andy out of financial strife.
I knew this was coming.
Every day, Andy comes to me talking about a new decision that he's made that has put him into further financial strife or has added some new responsibility.
Yep. We adopted a blind dog today.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's probably not going to work out. We might have to take her back.
Yeah.
I don't want the listeners to think, the Patreon supporters though, to think that I'm frittering away all the money that we get on blind dogs.
No. The money that he gets from this actually is the thing that saves him at the end of the month.
Goes straight into the mouths of my children.
Yeah, it's the money that he makes on his regular job that he fritters away. Would you say, what word did you use?
Fritters.
You fritter it away?
Yeah.
On responsibilities you don't need to have.
Mm-hmm. I spent all of my money on zucchini. Fuck it.
Man, that's a good place to... No, I think that's actually a genuinely good way to spend your money. On zucchini fritters? Yeah.
Yeah?
You could make worse choices. And you will. No, sorry. Andy's actually making some pretty good choices.
Thanks, Al.
He just cares a lot about everyone. Tabitha has three words, Andy.
Okay. I want to hear them.
Have you ever heard of this word? Game?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Heard of that? Game. Oh, G-A-M-E. Game.
Yeah. What does it make you think about?
It makes me think of Gamey Game, Evan's TV show. Our friend Evan, who runs Stupid Old Studios, has a show called Gamey Game that both you and I have been on a couple of times. Very funny.
Yeah. Well, it makes me think of venison.
Really?
Yeah, or deer, and all those kind of animals that look like deer.
Makes me think of The Game.
The Game?
Mm.
With Michael Douglas?
Yeah.
I like that movie a lot.
I think I remember liking it.
I mean, it was just one of those ones that has an
impact.
Was
The Game also the name of that pickup artist book?
Oh, yeah. It was also that, with Michael Douglas.
Mm.
I mean, if you were with Michael Douglas, I reckon it'd be easier to pick up.
I'm going to write a book called The Game. It's going to be exclusively about picking up Michael Douglas.
Well, I'm going to write a book called The Game, and it's going to be about picking up using Michael Douglas.
I mean, it's definitely a start, isn't it? Imagine if that was your form of peacocking. You walk in with Michael Douglas on your head.
If you had 24
Everyone's going to look at that guy with Michael Douglas on his head.
Absolutely. But even, you know, you don't even have to have Michael Douglas on your person. You could go up to a person in a bar, say, how would you like to come with me to dinner with Michael Douglas? I'm not kidding. You don't have to do anything. Right? You don't have to have sex with me or anything like that.
What a gentleman.
Yeah. all I want is for you to come with me, and I'll take you away to a place where you don't know where you're going. And then you'll have dinner with Michael Douglas. And then if you want to leave, I have no problem.
I mean, the mere fact that you specified that makes me have so much trust in you.
But, I mean, how it would be so much more effective than if the person you were suggesting was like, just like, you know, come and hang out with Evan Monroe Smith. Have dinner with Evan Monroe Smith, who does gamey.
I don't know. That would be pretty effective. I'd love to.
You think so? Just a stranger in a bar. This person they don't know.
They could be watching. They could be a fan of gamey.
I know, but
you're right.
He doesn't have the star power.
Michael Douglas is a great hook. You know, and if you can deliver on that, good luck to you. It's very exciting. Are you writing this down?
Yeah. All right. That was only one of Tabitha's words.
Great. Oh, we're doing well so far.
The second word is, what do you think it is?
Robespierre.
You so off. All right.
Oh, ow.
Second word is mountain.
Game mountain. Game mountain. I'd go to Game Mountain. I'd frolic in the foothills of Game Mountain. I might even go to base camp.
You know what I'm surprised about? Sort of all those animals that are a bit like deer. You know, like all the animals. There are a whole category of animals.
First base camp.
Okay. Yeah.
Second base camp.
Did we come up with an idea a long time ago about this place that's like base camp, but it's like not base camp, but it's, you go there and it's like base camp themed, and you feel like you're at base camp.
I don't know if we did actually, Al.
No? I think it's a fun idea.
It is a fun idea.
You go to this place, and it's always like, you always go like, you guys going to go up to the top? And they go, soon.
Yeah. Yeah. We're just prepping. We're just recovering.
Yeah. And then
we got
fun.
2 more days here to acclimatize to the thing. And then, you know, people come through and some of them go up to the summit, that sort of thing. But you don't. You're there for the base camp experience.
But they're just actors.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right.
They're just actors who come through.
Some people coming back from the summit. Sometimes people come back and they've lost a guy.
Mm. That'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or sometimes they go, we need a team to go up and rescue somebody. And then you have to act as a coward. You have to be a coward and not go up.
No one out there is offering a coward simulator. You know, all these, you know, first person, like IRL shooters, these escape rooms or whatever, you know, those things where you get to shoot zombies. Where's the coward option?
That's right. Just running.
Mm.
One of these things where you don't actually, or you have a gun, but the only target you have to hit with your gun is you have to throw it on the ground.
You got
to
hit the ground.
Yeah. And then you have to run.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to survive by just trying to not get scratched too much.
But also if you could somehow like survive by turning in your friends.
That would be good. Oh, that's a great game.
Yeah.
Where all you got to do is give up all your friends. But I guess there's got to be something that makes it more difficult.
It's called show business. Is it?
I don't think that's what show
business. No, it's not really. No. Sorry, my mistake.
And then the last word, Andy.
Yep.
And then I had to look it up. Now, even though I do come from Canada from a long time ago, this word, T-O-Q-U-E,
toque.
Looks like it says toque. But I looked it up, and then I remembered it. And I could be completely incorrect, but I believe in Canada it is pronounced toque.
Toque?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think it's the French word, in toque.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it's in toque. I don't know.
In toque.
In toque.
In toque.
In toque. In toque. I don't know. But I'm going to go with toque. And it's toque. Just a beanie. It's just a...
Great.
A warm beanie.
Game Mountain toque.
Yeah.
Took. I, you know that phenomenon of frogs that are, you put them in, you can put them in water and you boil the water slowly and they have no idea. Mm. And then they just cook. But they don't realize it's getting hot. I don't know if that's true, by the way. It's a great analogy for stuff.
Mm.
But I don't know if it's a real thing. But I feel like that could happen to me very easily with having a beanie on my head. There's been some days where it like starts out cold. I got a beanie on my head. I won't realize, like the day will get quite hot and I won't realize I've got a beanie on my head until it's almost too late. Like sure. I'm like, I am feeling terrible and something is wrong with my body. And then like the last second I'll maybe even not conscious, I might graze it or something and realize that I have the beanie on there. But I feel like I'm at risk of cooking in my own skull because I don't want to take off a beanie.
And maybe that could be useful.
Yes.
That could be useful, like, as a superpower where fainting becomes useful.
I mean, this would be great if you were a coward.
Fainting?
Yeah.
I know, but a coward is pretty useless. That's one of the benefits of being a coward.
Also, if you faint...
No responsibility.
I think if you faint,
yeah,
you're not really a coward, are you? You know, it's like somebody who accidentally does something heroic.
Mm.
If you're fainting, you're kind of an accidental coward. You don't really get to claim credit for being a coward. That's what just your body letting you down.
What if you could be an on-purpose coward? Like an on-purpose fainting coward?
Mm.
Like if you
like
were,
on command.
Like your superpower was that you could truly faint, but on command.
Yeah.
Like, you know, sort of like a kangaroo can sort of will a way of terminating their young.
I've heard this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like that, but with fainting.
I mean, what an amazing place to go to for an example of something that you can do intentionally.
Well, it's just one of those things that you can do with your body.
Of almost everything that is done.
Well, no, because it's a specific example because it's a thing that most people don't have the ability to do with their body.
Okay.
And is normally just an involuntary thing, but you can control it.
Okay. 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 See? Okay. Okay, cool. Yeah, now, where would this be useful?
Okay.
I guess a scenario where you have to cause a distraction during a bank robbery.
Mm.
You know, you're locked up in prison, right? Yeah. And you need to trick the guards into coming into the room so that you can hit them on the head.
Yeah, but now, do you see the flaw in what you're saying? It's starting to sound pretty heroic.
Oh, and it's supposed to be cowardice.
Well, this person's a coward. And
it's so hard to get my head around exactly what it is we're trying to achieve here. We want somebody
who uses
their superpower of being able to intentionally faint in order to
achieve their cowardice.
Okay, so
how
okay,
about this?
Oh no, this is quite good.
Yeah.
So like there is a scenario where like there is a baby stuck in a burning building, right? And this coward is walking past and somebody says, "Oh my God, please help the baby." Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they are able to faint like that and get out of it.
That's right. And they could even, in that scenario, they're even sort of taking the attention of other people who might be walking by.
They are.
Who could be running into the building.
I mean, that's incredible, isn't it? That they're not like, it's not just cowardice. It's
I mean, even
they're making things worse.
The person who's yelling out, "My baby," is now worried about them. Who's fainted.
Oh no, my
oh my rescuer,
my person who could potentially have saved my baby.
And then there's that person then calling out for somebody, save my baby and my potential
rescue. Oh, somebody, please
rescue.
Save this guy. He's going to save my baby.
I guess also. You could, this is a similar kind of, you know, scenario in which you could do it, but let's say you're visiting your grandmother. She lives in a home and she's just handed you your tray or you know, you're sitting on the couch and she's sitting on her lazy boy and she had handed you your tray that had, you know, an onion and tuna sandwich or something like that.
Your grandmother is handing this to you?
Yeah, yeah. And then, and then she sits on her chair and she eats her sandwich that she made as well. And then you finish your plate and she goes, "Hand me your plate," like that. And then you pretend to faint.
So you don't have to give her back the tray?
Yeah, like so she'll come and get it and be like worried about you and stuff.
I mean, is that cowardice? Do you think that the thing that's stopping you from giving back the tray is cowardice? Because this sounds just more like laziness.
Yeah, but you know, laziness I think is just an
offcut. A very mild form of cowardice about you're scared to make any effort.
Because I think what is laziness? It's like you're afraid of the pain of effort.
It's amazing because she was sitting in a lazy boy, but really it was you who was the lazy boy.
You were the lazy boy all along.
All along.
That thing was just a recliner. But when it needs to, it doesn't recline. It gets to work. Whereas you, when you need it, that's when you really do your reclining.
I sit on an incliner.
Look, I'm just going to write down fainting superpower for coward.
Great.
This is not really super, but...
No, it's a superpower. I mean, it's a, you know, it's above and beyond what the rest of us are able to achieve. I thought you were going to suggest in the nursing home scenario that one of the nurses comes in and says, oh, could you please help me, you know, to wash your grandma or something like that, and then you faint.
Oh, no, it wasn't going to be that big a task.
Yeah. No, you were good. You did good, Al.
Yeah.
Can you take us through the sketches that we've come up with on this episode of the podcast?
Well, then there's obviously these, the guy who's caught pulling nostril hairs out of out of his nose, and says that, you know, when somebody says it's disgusting, he says, well, actually, I think that these kinds of things, these kinds of grooming responsibilities that society pressures us into should be visible to everyone, so that, and then he somehow forces women and butchers and sort of abattoirists and, you know, and also maybe the migrant workers and the people who take advantage of them too. Everybody has to work out in the open, do all their stuff right out in the open. All the things that we're ashamed
of. I think a lot of the migrant workers do have to work out in the open. I think that's part of the...
Well, how about...
hardship.
Okay. Sometimes they work in sort of...
You're right, though.
Scenarios in which we sort of pretend like it's not happening.
I think you're right. I think we're talking about the same cafe. We're thinking of the same cafe, aren't you? Aren't we, you and I? We're all the... seems like all the immigrant workers are out the back in the kitchen.
Yeah, but not just that. I think it's most low-paid jobs. They're just kind of... Anyway... Look, it doesn't sound as funny on the way back.
I think that's definitely something. And I'd also like to just reiterate my idea about a waxing salon, which hangs up all the strips of wax with all the hair on them, used strips, out the front. It's kind of like when you go past a farm and a farmer has, like, shot a whole lot of foxes and, like, tied the tails to the fence line or whatever. That'll it's like that. Them. You know, you really show what you're capable of. And if you looked at that and you saw those strips of wax and you were like, man, there's so many hairs on this strip, you know that they're doing a good job. I think it'd look pretty cool. And the building, it'd look all furry.
Oh, yeah. It would look really cool to see sort of white strips with wax on them filled with hair.
Fur is not really a thing that's used very much in architecture. So.
Or paper with sort of sticky wax on it with... sort of leg hairs embedded in the wax.
Sure.
I think that's an object that's used even less in architecture.
Yeah. I mean, you're making it, the way you're describing it is making it sound like kind of less.
Yeah.
Like kind of.
By describing it as what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
The portable terrarium to adapt to the insect death.
Yeah. It's just a logical extension of.
So we're just creating microclimates to go around us. We have mentioned somehow that we're going to have tiny humans living in there. We could just be insects and stuff like that we keep in our tiny ecosystem.
Yeah, that'd be nice. But, you know, if tiny humans turns out we've killed all the insects before we get around to making this, maybe it'll have to be tiny humans.
Yeah, right.
They could still buzz if you like.
That'd be good. They could do every job. We got... nipple medals, obviously. It's just a way of really remembering the war vets.
That's it, you know? Yeah, on your way up to the cenotaph to lay a wreath, you got your jingly jangly... No, you're not wearing a shirt, by the way. You're topless. And,
We got CRISPR.
CRISPR.
CRISPR, which
terrifying.
Is the... It's the monster that was formed from the remnants of old lunches in the work fridge after... Pam went on holidays for 2 weeks. And it goes and feeds on, you know,
tonight,
grows.
Leftovers are having you for dinner.
Probably does start eating people.
Yeah.
Probably starts putting them in the fridge. They start going moldy. Then it can add them to its person.
Yes. It's a sentient mold. Could be a slime mold.
Oh. and made out of like old roasted carrot sticks. Then we got the game, which is where you use Michael Douglas to help pick up.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And then we got the fainting superpower for a coward. Because I think that's the real difference there, is that most superpowers, you see them applied by people who are trying to be heroic.
Or trying to be villainous.
Or villainous. But it's still something in which you win.
It's still active.
Yeah.
You know? You're still getting involved. Not this one. Their superpower is to be not involved.
Mm.
To avoid responsibility.
And it sort of opens up the world of more like, well, how, if people did have super mental powers and super physical powers, how would they use those to avoid the work that they currently try to do?
Yeah, because we both know that if you or I had superpowers, that is how we would deploy them,
mm-hmm.
you know, in some sort of procrastination. The procrastinator. Thank you so much for listening to the show. We really do appreciate it.
We very much appreciate it. Please, you can find us on Twitter at @2inTank. I'm at AlistairTB.
I'm at StupidOldAndy.
You can review us on iTunes. We absolutely love it. You can review...
the show.
The show. You can review yourselves. You can find your own address on YouTube. I mean, on Google Maps. And maybe review your house.
Yeah.
You know, just get yourself into a reviewing flow, and then eventually you might review our podcast.
Once you realize how good it feels to have been reviewed, you'll know how good it is for us when we get reviewed. And we've had a few really, really lovely ones recently.
Thank you so much.
It's so nice.
People have responded to
I think we really begged
begging.
Pretty hard on a recent podcast, and it paid big dividends.
It really paid big dividends.
And
we
it taught
like
us
three.
The lesson that begging and appearing pathetic
really works for
us. Gets results, yeah. So we're going
to
keep doing that.
It's where we really come into our own.
Yes.
So give us a review. It makes us feel really good.
And if you want to support us on Patreon, that would be lovely as well.
Patreon.com/2inTank. It can be just a couple of bucks. It can be half a buck if you want. It doesn't matter. It's just lovely to help Andy climb out of the hole.
Correct.
That he's in, or buy a ladder.
And we love you.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.